translation and purport also by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: therefore, my dear King, first offer prasad unto the brahmanas and the demigods, and after sumptuously feeding them, you may distribute prasad to other living entities according to your ability. In this way, you will be able to worship all living entities, or, in other words, the supreme living entity within every living entity. Purport: to distribute prasad to all living entities, the process is that we must first offer prasad to the brahmanas and the vaishnavas. For the demigods are represented by the brahmanas. In this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart, will be worshipped. This is the Vedic system of offering prasad. Whenever there is a ceremony for distribution of prasad, the prasad is offered first to the brahmanas, then to the children and old men, then to the women, and then to the animals like the dogs and other domestic animals. When it is said that Narayana, the Supreme Being, is situated in everyone's heart, this does not mean that everyone has become Narayana, or that a particular poor man has become Narayana. Such a conclusion is rejected herein. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruha Shriyuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum langhayate girim Yat kripatamaham vande Shri Gurun dinatarinam Vancha kalpatarubhyascha Kripa sindhubhya evacha Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Namo mahavadanyaya Krishna prema pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gauratvishe Namaha Pancha Tattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam Aradhyo Bhagavan Vraje Shatanayas Taddhama Vrindavanam Ramya Kachidupasana Vrajavadhu Vargenaya Kalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanamamalam Prema Pumartho Mahan Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhur Matamidam Tatradarahana Paraha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gauranga राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी शुभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिये। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभो नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। हरे कृष्ण। Happy to be back in the Bhaktivedanta manor again. It is a challenge to speak in the presence of His Holiness Jayadvaita Swami. One has to be very careful what one will speak in the class. I will have to speak in measured tones and words. Try to repeat what Srila Prabhupada has taught in his books and his lectures. This section of five chapters of the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with the Varnashrama Dharma. Having concluded the very long description of the advent of Lord Narasimhadev and the protection of Prahlad, Narad Muni is now describing, at Yudhishthira Maharaj's request, the characteristics or the activities or functions and duties of the different varnas and ashramas. In chapter 11 of this canto, he has spoken about the four varnas in brief. And then in chapter 12, he speaks about the Brahmachari ashram and the Vanaprastha ashram. In chapter 13, he speaks about the Sannyas ashram. And in this chapter, the 14th chapter, he speaks about the Grihastha ashram and the duties that a Grihastha should perform according to time, place and circumstance. So these injunctions or these rules and regulations that are mentioned here are often very difficult to follow in this age of Kali. And apart from that, one may wonder what these instructions have to do with pure devotional service, because there is mention of worship of the demigods, worship of the forefathers, and so many things. A brief word, therefore, about Varnashrama Dharma on one hand and pure devotional service on the other hand. There is, of course, a connection. Dharma svanushritaha punsam vishvaksena kathasuya notpadiyad yadiratim shrama evahi kevalam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam says that the perfection of the performance of one's occupational duties according to the Varnashrama system is that one should develop attraction for the descriptions of the Lord. And if in the course of performing these duties one has not achieved such an attraction, then all these duties and activities are a waste of time. Shrama eva hi kevalam. So the purpose of the Varnashrama system is to eventually bring us to the point of pure devotional service. And the heart of pure devotional service is hearing and chanting about the Lord. However, since not everybody is inclined towards pure devotional service, in the Vedic culture, the large majority of people were encouraged to make gradual progression on the spiritual path, and therefore the rules and regulations of the Varnashrama system have been given. In the Varnashrama system, we will find many rules and regulations that pertain to the worship of the Supreme Lord, but we will also find many rules and regulations that pertain to the worship of the forefathers, the worship of the demigods, because essentially Varnashrama Dharma, traditionally speaking, is a path of karma. There is a lot of fruitive activity there. Elevation to the Swargaloka, the heavenly planets, and so on and so forth. But the idea is that by following this restriction, or the following the authority of the scripture, and by worshipping higher authorities, even if they be demigods, and also one also worships the Supreme Lord, one will make advancement like that. But in and of themselves, the rules and regulations of Varnashrama are not considered a limb of devotional service. This is a clear conclusion of Srila Rupa Goswami in the Nectar of Devotion. So we use Varnashrama Dharma to gradually uplift ourselves to the platform of pure devotional service. So the question naturally arises, what about those who are already on the path of pure devotional service? We may not be pure devotees, but we are on the path of pure devotional service. Then what implications do the rules and regulations of Varnashrama Dharma have to do with us on this path? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur resolves this by stating very simply that we accept those rules and regulations of the Varnashrama Dharma that are favorable for our devotional service, for our bhakti. And we do not accept those that are not favorable for our bhakti. Very simple point. Therefore, we see that even though the varnas and ashrams in and of themselves do not have anything to do with bhakti per se, but we utilize them for the purpose of bhakti. For example, a young man may decide to get married because that is the dharmic way of living a sinless life, and it is a good situation for him in which to continue his devotional service in a stable way. So getting married is not a part of bhakti, but it is something that could be very helpful for that individual's bhakti. Similarly, if somebody takes sannyas, the act of taking sannyas is in and of itself not bhakti, because there are many mayavadis who take sannyas, there are many others who take sannyas who are not devotees. But one takes sannyas for the sake of preaching Krishna consciousness. One may take it for the sake of deepening one's sense of renunciation and detachment from this world so that one can serve Krishna exclusively and better. So while sannyas in and of itself is not a limb of bhakti, but we use it to further the purposes of bhakti. So like that, there are many injunctions given here which we will have to see carefully, and therefore we have the purports of a pure devotee acharya like Srila Prabhupada, so that we can understand things in proper perspective. In this chapter, Narad Muni has opened the discussion by speaking about how a grihastha must be Krishna conscious, how he must do everything for the sake of pleasing Lord Vasudev. He must not try to earn a livelihood simply for enjoyment, but he must do so for the sake of pleasing Lord Vasudev. And therefore, he should associate with Vaishnavas and hear from them about the Supreme Lord. He should try to lead a simple life, avoiding all types of greed and desire for more and more accumulation of wealth and material assets. And if in the course of pursuing the simple life, his relatives and friends and so on urge him to give up this path of simplicity, then Narad Muni advises us, some very nice advice, that we should just say, yes, yes, you are right, but keep on doing what we are doing. It's a very practical tip from Narad Muni, who is an expert preacher. Don't quarrel with them. Say, yes, yes, you are right, and go on doing devotional service. And then Narad Muni talks about five duties of the grihasthas. So one must first of all worship the Supreme Lord. Secondly, one must worship the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. Thirdly, one must worship all other living entities, that is human beings as well as animals. Fourthly, one must worship the forefathers. And lastly, one must offer the prasadam to oneself. Now, in the 16th verse, we are now in the 18th verse. In the 16th verse, Narad Muni talks about how one should worship the Supreme Lord. In yesterday's verse, we heard how one should worship the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. That's the second category. And in today's verse, Narad Muni is speaking about how one should serve all other living entities. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada has obviated for us the need to worship the demigods by stating that by worshipping the Brahmanas, we are automatically worshipping the demigods. So one does not need, as Vaishnavas, to separately worship the demigods. Now it is interesting that in the 9th verse of this chapter, when Narad Muni is talking about how the householder should serve other living entities, he mentions one should also worship the animals. I'll just briefly read the relevant portion of this verse in the purport. The verse says, one should treat animals such as deer, camels, asses, monkeys, mice, snakes and birds and flies exactly like one's own son. How little difference there actually is between children and these innocent animals. That's the verse, and I'll read a portion of the purport. Unfortunately, modern society has devised many means for killing animals in different forms of life. Oops. What is that? There is a mobile Purana which prescribes different unpleasant destinations for those whose phones ring in the class. So we should be well acquainted with the modern scriptures as well as the Vedic, older Vedic scriptures. It's dangerous. For example, in the agricultural fields, there may be many mice, flies, and other creatures that disturb production. And sometimes they are killed by pesticides. In this verse, however, such killing is forbidden. Every living entity should be nourished by the food given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Human society should not consider itself the only enjoyer of all the properties of God. Rather, men should understand that all the other animals also have a claim to God's property. If everyone is fully satisfied by eating food that is a gift from the Lord, why should there be envy between one living being and another? In modern days, people are very much inclined towards communistic ideas of society, but we do not think that there can be any better communistic idea than what is explained in this verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in the communistic countries, the poor animals are killed without consideration, although they should also have the right to take their allotted food with which to live. So interesting how Srila Prabhupada is describing here how even the animals and the plant and the plants and the insects and so on have a right to enjoy what the Lord has provided in nature. It is not exclusively the prerogative of humanity to enjoy what nature has provided. So one must share. And we see this exactly. There are farmers in India today still who will keep all sorts of facilities for the animals to eat because they know that the animals will come and destroy the crops. At the same time, they have some place where there is some food available for them. This kind of culture of sharing is a very important and integral part of the Vedic culture. As devotees, we grapple with the two extremes. One is the, shall we say, the rules and regulations of the Varnashrama, and the other is the principles of pure devotional service. And many times, where does one draw the line? Where is the interface between the two? So one needs the purports of Srila Prabhupada and Acharyas to understand this very clearly. So even though Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Sri Sri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nitai ki jai, so there is a sequence or a hierarchy in which one would offer prasadam, which is considered one of the important methods of performing charity in this age. And there is a hierarchy, as we have seen. First we we have to worship the Supreme Lord, then we offer it to the Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and then to other living entities. And even when it comes to other living entities, there is a sequence, as Prabhupada says here. The Brahmanas, then the children and old men, then the women, and then the animals and dogs and everyone. So which means that even the animals have to be fed. Now we're talking about the individual grihastha. Now I'm not advocating that we institutionalize this principle and that we have massive food distribution to the dogs in the street, lest we understand that as a conclusion of what I'm saying, but we are just talking about what Prabhupada is mentioning here. It indicates the large-heartedness of the Vedic culture. It indicates how Vedic culture was so inclusive, and yet the focus was on pure devotional service. In fact, Srila Prabhupada mentions in that section of the purport which I read earlier that a Krishna-conscious person will do this. In other words, it's an injunction for devotees also not to be hard-hearted in the name of being devotees. On one hand, we run the risk of being sentimental and mundane, and on the other hand, or just plain philanthropic and altruistic, on the other hand, we run the risk of being very hard-hearted in the name of being spiritual or transcendental. So these are a good amalgam of how as devotees we can interact with the rest of the world. So the Vedic culture is characterized by this large-heartedness. We've all probably heard this phrase, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. It's very popular. And it means, the world is my family. And the verse actually goes like this, Ayam nijah paro vethi ganana laghu chetasam udara charitanam tu vasudhaiva kutumbakam. Ayam nijah paro vethi, this is mine, that is not mine. This kind of ganana, calculation or consideration, is a thinking process of those who are laghu chetasam, whose mentality is very narrow. Narrow-minded people think in terms of this is mine, I, me and mine. Whereas those who are broad-hearted, large-hearted, udara charitanam, they consider Vasudha or the whole earth to be one kutumba or family. So we have divided the world into so many political and other borders, and therefore we discriminate. And we don't consider everyone else as ours. This is person from my community, my caste, my creed, my nation, and we discriminate. Whereas with a larger vision, Srila Prabhupada talks about this kind of vision, about how these political boundaries are actually artificial. And he mentions how actually there is no scarcity of any of natural products in this world. Of course, one reason why there is some kind of imbalance is because there is no yajna. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Annat bhavanti bhutani parjanyat anna sambhavaha yajnat bhavati parjanyo yajna karma samudbhavaha. He says, all living entities live or subsist on grains. Grains are possible because of rainfall. Rainfall happens when there is yajna or sacrifice, and sacrifice is born out of prescribed duties. So because there is no yajna, there is imbalance in the natural scheme of things. But that apart, even where there is abundance, we see in the modern times, there is much wastage. There are instances when governments will dump millions of tons of food grains into the sea for political and economic reasons, just so that the market price shouldn't rise or whatever reasons they have. Now, this Prabhupada explains that foodstuffs like this could have been shared. It could have been given to other countries, other peoples where there is a shortage of food. Equitable distribution could have been possible. But because we have made these different political boundaries, which are artificial, we deprive others of what is their due. And we keep for ourselves thinking, I should get richer at the expense of others. So this kind of narrow-minded mentality actually finds expression even in the international political and economic field in activities like this. But the Vedic culture is one that encourages large-heartedness. So much so that there is very little privacy a grihastha has according to the Vedic culture, because every day the grihastha will invite guests and feed them prasadam. I'd like to read a purport from the Chaitanya Charitamrita in this regard. This is from the Madhya Leela, chapter 3, Lord Chaitanya at the house of Advaita Acharya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has just taken sannyas, and Nityananda Prabhu has tricked him to come to Shantipur, and Advaita Acharya and his good wife are serving Mahaprabhu prasadam. This is text 41. I'll just read a section of the purport. Quote, "This is the ideal householder's life. The husband and wife live together, and the husband works very hard to secure paraphernalia for worshipping Lord Vishnu. The wife at home cooks a variety of foods for Lord Vishnu, and the husband offers it to the deity. After that, arati is performed and the prasadam is distributed amongst family members and guests. According to the Vedic principles, there must always be a guest in a householder's house. In my childhood, I have actually seen my father receive not less than 4 guests every day. And in those days, my father's income was not very great. Nonetheless, there was no difficulty in offering prasadam to at least 4 guests every day. According to Vedic principles, a householder, before taking lunch, should go outside and shout very loudly to see if there is anyone without food. In this way, he invites people to take prasadam. If someone comes, the householder offers him prasadam, and if there is not much left, he should offer his own portion to the guest. If no one responds to his call, the householder can accept his own lunch. Thus, the householder's life is also a kind of austerity. Because of this, the householder's life is called the Grihastha Ashram." Unquote. So that's something really very significant. What Srila Prabhupada is mentioning here about the Grihastha going out, yes, it's there in the Dharma Shastras. The Grihastha is supposed to, before every meal, come out of his house and say 3 times, "Is anyone hungry? Is there anyone hungry? Is there anyone hungry?" And it's not that you whisper it so that no one hears, so you can rush back in and eat. Prabhupada very clearly says you have to shout loud. You shout out loud if there's anybody hungry. And then if they come, then you feed them. You feed them not grudgingly, but you feed them with a good heart, with a happy heart, considering that Krishna has sent these people to me. See how nicely Prabhupada is integrating the Varnashrama Dharma with the duties in Krishna consciousness. So a householder may be a devotee, but yes, he still has to invite guests. The householder has to feed them nice Krishna prasadam, welcome them with sweet words, and have some Krishna katha and Krishna kirtan and so on. So this is the way we would integrate the Varnashrama system with the path of pure devotional service. But it goes to show that people in the Vedic culture were advised to open their house out to the world. There was no question of privacy and independence, and where we don't even know who the neighbor is for 20 years living together in the same building or the same floor. Your house was open. Your life was an open book. There were joint families. So today, unfortunately, we have a system where we put inordinate emphasis on privacy and my life, and therefore we breed selfishness. We lose the large-heartedness that characterized Vedic culture. And even though there is abundance of production, mass production, and there is abundance of consumption as well. This is a consumerist culture. But there is very little sharing. Whereas in the Vedic culture, there is abundant production, but there is very little consumption. And there is abundant sharing. So, the Upanishads, which are generally very, very philosophical. The Taittiriya Upanishad, for example, talks about a lot about how one should deal with food. Annam bahu kurvita. One should abundantly produce food grains and one should distribute. Not that one should keep it only for oneself. So here for a householder it is recommended, yes, whatever excess production you give away. And even today we will find in the villages in India, because I deal a lot with the villages, we have many farm projects, we have villagers who don't sell their food. Now it's rapidly changing. They will share their excess produce with other villagers. If I have some extra rice, I will give it to my neighbor. He has vegetables, he will give it to me. It's like one big family. Such a nice culture, such a nice atmosphere, where everyone is living together nicely. There's no question of just me and mine, but we share. So it's a culture of sharing that is really so important. And here we see that a grihastha also accumulates wealth for the sake of serving the Lord, offers bhoga, and then distributes this prasadam everywhere. Srila Prabhupada one time mentions, but today's civilization is characterized by accumulation of unnecessary necessities. We think they're necessities, but actually they're not. They're luxuries. So he uses the term unnecessary necessities. And interestingly, the American humorist and writer Mark Twain has a similar quote which I had come across some time ago. He says, civilization is the limitless multiplication of unnecessary necessaries. Same thing that Prabhupada is saying actually. So modern or mundane civilization means to just increase your wants. Increase your consumption, consumerism. But there is very little about sharing. So as Vaishnavas, yes, we share prasadam. And according to Nectar of Instruction, it's one of the symptoms, or the two symptoms of loving exchanges between devotees is bhunkte bhojayate chaiva. That we feed the devotees prasadam and we accept prasadam from them. This is the way we share. But in today's age, there is an abundance, but an abundance of all kinds of unnecessary things, of the wrong things. Abundance of electronic gadgets, abundance of all kinds of industrial produce, abundance of everything. And when there is abundance of grain, we don't distribute equitably. Srila Prabhupada one time famously declared, we cannot eat nuts and bolts. So we emphasize so much the abundance of industrial produce, but we do not emphasize the abundance of agricultural produce and then share it with everybody. There is a joke that I came across. Please laugh when I finish it. One time there was a survey that was carried out. And the survey was, they were asked a question, the respondents were asked a question. What is your opinion about shortage of food in the rest of the world? And strangely enough, nobody could answer this question. Why not? When they went to Africa, no offense intended, they couldn't answer this question because nobody knew what food was. They came to Europe, and nobody could answer this question because they didn't know what scarcity was. Of course, now it's a different scenario. Then they went to China, and nobody could answer the question because they didn't know what opinion was. And then they went to America, and no one could answer the question in America because they didn't know what the rest of the world was. So in other words, we are so self-centered that we don't want to share. And because we have to strike at the root, the family is the basic social unit. If you want to change the world, you have to change the family structure. You have to change the family culture. Then you can change the whole world. Otherwise, as I mentioned, the culture that you have, the stinginess and the small petty-mindedness that characterizes the family unit right now will find expression at the international level as well. I think it was Lenin who said, not that we agree with him on many things, but he said, give me a good mother and I will give you a good nation. So if we focus on basic family values, on basic principles of devotional service and ethics and values of the family culture, then the whole world will be such a better place to be in. So annam bahu kurvita, yes, we want abundance of the right kind of things. And then we want to share a lot. We want to share abundantly, and our personal consumption is limited. The modern civilization encourages abundant consumption. Overproduction of the wrong things and abundant consumption, whereas the Vedic culture doesn't do that. So we share a lot. I was told that in the South Indian state of Tamil Nadu, still there are people who follow this practice of going out of the house and saying, you know, is there anyone hungry? In some villages, there are people who still do that. Of course, it's hard now in the modern city culture for someone living on the 20th floor to look out and say, is there anyone hungry? It's not something practical. But we can certainly, as devotees, invite devotees home for prasadam, have some nice Krishna katha, and then be large-hearted. I grew up seeing my mother feeding the birds in the house, feeding the dogs outside on the street. It was part of the culture. So also for a devotee, yes, you feed prasadam to the guests who come in and leave a little something for the sparrows who come in or something. Yes, that's part of the whole thing. That's mentioned here. Prabhupada talks about it. So these are some of the nuances of serving other living entities. And then in the next verses, Narad Muni is going to talk about serving the forefathers. So it's 8:30, we'll stop here and wait for a few comments or questions.